And so, right, my sobriety date is 5/1/81. I got sober when I was 27 years old, and I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I have two home groups, one in person and one online. I absolutely love Zoom groups. Congratulations to all the day counters, and thank you to all of you who do service to keep this thing going. It's an incredible service organization here, and I just love it. I've been here a few times, and I got invited after I came to hear a friend of mine speak here, and I just absolutely love the way this thing works. It's incredible. So, I love beginners meetings. I absolutely love beginners meetings because I would never have made it without a beginners meeting. That I just have to start by telling you that I was working in treatment when I got sober, faking it, faking it, white knuckling it. I was completely burnt out by 27 years old because I started when I was 10. Because alcohol was everywhere in my family of origin. They call us the Jersey Hillbillies in New Jersey, in the mountains. They're not like really rural anymore, but they were when I was growing up. And by 27, I was just completely wrung out, and I was going through the motions. I had managed to get myself a college degree, and I was clinging to that, thinking that made me somebody. But when I wandered into that beginner's meeting, a bunch of my patients from that detox I was working in came up. One old guy came up and shook my hand and said, "Thank God you made it. That, people were, you spotted, you got it." And so, I'm grateful that some of those people recognized me, shook my hand, and welcomed me in then. I'm grateful now today that after COVID, we have all these Zoom meetings. My Zoom home group is welcoming, just like you guys. When people come and we go, "Thank God you're here. Come back, come back." And I love that, I tell you, on page 21, it talks about a real alcoholic. I am a real alcoholic. I'm that person, that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I was this sweet little girl that talked behind her hands and cried if you called on me in a class or at work, because I was nothing without the drink. But give me the drink, and I turned into a maniac. I would go into bars and cause fights, just to see the excitement, and I didn't, I would black out. I didn't know what I was doing. I would end up in places, and I was just a little quiet girl without it. I couldn't do a thing. Fear ran my life. And honestly, fear ran my life for a lot of years into recovery, too. Not all of us have that wonderful pink cloud, Not all of us get over the craving for the drink right away when we get sober. I had a sponsor. I call her the sponsor with the velvet hammer because she was kind and gentle to me, or I don't think I would have stayed. But she kept saying to me, "Are you done yet?" Because I was trying out, I was trying to get by without having to do the steps and work the program. I was going through the motions, and other substances are part of my story, which I'm not going to talk about here because it is AA, but it complicated things, it complicated things, and it made it hard for me. I couldn't read when I first took the alcohol out. I bumped into walls. I didn't have very good balance. I didn't understand the things that you guys were trying to tell me about working this program. I was a mess. For a couple of years, I was a mess. When they say 90 and 90, I went to about 180 or 190 in 90 because if I didn't know what to do with myself. They took me off of working a regular shift and put me onto the night shift so I wouldn't cause any damage to my patients, because I couldn't function. I was dangerous, And But the thing is, my sponsor said, don't drink, don't drug, and don't die, and you got a chance. And I wanted to die. I thought that life would be better if I just wasn't here. But I was terrified that if I tried and failed, I'd be a vegetable with my mother wiping my butt, and I didn't want that either. And my sponsor, when I couldn't read and couldn't under, I would read things. She gave me the 24-hour-a-day book and said, every day, take a quiet time. Read your book, take 5 minutes of quiet, and then call me and tell me what you read. And I couldn't understand what I read, so she'd read it with me. And she'd ask me, what did you get? What's one thing you got out of that? So little by little, things started to settle in. And we're not going to have time for that whole story, obviously. Needless to say, it worked. I'm still here. I just celebrated 45 years, So, it did work one day at a time, and gradually it sunk in. She would show up at my door and say, get in the car. We're going to a meeting. And she had her little group of women. She had 26 years. All the women around her had about that or more. And they would take me to meetings with them. So I learned that service was the key, and it still is. At 90 days, they put me in a car. They took me to a meeting like halfway across the state in the city. And I said, when we got there, I said, who's the speaker? And they said, you are. So 12-step work became part of what we do. She would call me up and say, we're going on a 12-step call. And in those days, a 12-step call meant you were going out to talk to somebody to help somebody who had called the 24-hour line and wanted help. So we would go maybe to a hotel room or somebody's house or someplace and share our experience, strength, and hope. And most of the time, sometimes those folks would go to a meeting with you. A lot of times you'd sit for a couple hours and talk, and then they'd say thanks, but no thanks. And I'd be like all devastated because I was a sensitive little girl with no alcohol in me. And I'd say, well, that didn't work. And she'd say, what do you mean? And I'd say, well, they don't want our help. And she'd say, who stayed sober? Did you stay sober? Yes. Well, then it was a success. So, that was the beginning of my recovery. Slowly but surely, she put me into the steps. The first step was writing out what are you powerless over and how is your life unmanageable. She had me put that on a little piece of paper and put that in my wallet and carry it with me so that if I had a craving for a drink, I was to pull that out and read that so I would remember I am a real alcoholic. Here are the things that happened to me. Here is how I am powerless over a drink. Here's what happens. And here's the way it affects my life and the people around me. That's how my life is unmanageable. I still have that piece of paper. I'm grateful for that. I wasn't always grateful because I would have rather done it my way. I did not like the word God because I grew up in a very strict, very like Bible thumping home, but there was also a lot of violence in my home, and I thought it was really hypocritical. And I thought, where was God when I needed him? And so, in the beginning, I hated the fact that you guys used the word God, and I wanted nothing to do with it. And she said, what it says in the big book, why don't you find your own concept of God? I was struggling, I didn't sleep for probably the first 6 months. In the program, and she got, honestly, I think she held the phone out at arm's length half the time when I was calling her and moaning and crying. But one night I was complaining again, I know I'm not going to sleep. And she said, do you have a nightstand next to your bed? And I said, yes. And she said, open the drawer. And I said, all right. And she said, take all your problems out of your head and put them in that drawer. Now slam it shut. Now tell God you put them in there and please take care of them. You need a good night's sleep. Now go to bed, go to sleep. And I said, what? She said, do it. And she hung up. And I slept that night. And then, of course, the next morning I called her after I did my reading and she said, "How'd you sleep last night?" And I said, "Actually, pretty good." And she said, "Maybe that higher power works after all." And she hung up. After a while, I started to realize maybe her higher power worked and maybe I should try using it, and I still didn't use the. Well, I use Group of Drunks, Great Outdoors, whatever, but it worked, so I started trying it. She had me memorize the third step prayer, and I hated anything. Like I was an old hippie, I was a hippie. I was raised in the 60s and 70s, and so I didn't think that discipline worked, that kind of discipline of doing following directions. So I rebelled against anything she said. And anytime she'd tell me something, it would be like, yeah, but, or no. And, but then eventually I would realize that the things that she was telling me worked. And one thing was that, like, my life was chaos, everything was just spinning. And when I would go to her house or sit down with her, it was like I just saw this peaceful person. And she'd say, like, "Well, what do you want, dear? I want what you have." And she'd say, like, "Oh, you want what I have, do what I do." So that whole idea that, I could have what she wanted, it began to kind of sink into my head. So this, she was my sponsor for just the first couple of years of recovery, and I've been around a long time. But honestly, I think it's those lessons from the first sponsor we have that really sink in. So finally, of course, she had me write my fourth step, and I wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote, but I was terrified. I was so filled with shame and embarrassment. I was terrified to tell her, and I put it off and put it off. And honestly, I was about 2.5 years sober before I finally did my fifth step. And I didn't get to do it with her because I delayed so long that she moved away. But, you hang around the rooms, you hang around here, people get to know you. Like today, how everybody was yelling out to everybody and remembered who people were and where they. I love that. That's we'll love you until you can love yourself. And what happened is a woman came up to me who saw how antsy I, they say if you don't do a fourth, you'll drink a fifth. And that's exactly this woman saw. And she came up to me and she said, "You, my house, Tuesday, 2 o'clock." And I'm like, "Oh my God." And what she did was she kind of put it to me so that I would get this done. And it was amazing, just like they talk about. She told me, things that I would have never believed. She was super upper class. Her husband was a pilot for United Airlines. I thought, what can we have in common? But in truth, it's that thing that happens. Like the people in my online home group, some of them are here today. They said to me, one guy said to me last week, "You don't look like you could have done anything naughty." And it made me laugh. I said, maybe you should come to hear me share next week because, like, I would have caused trouble. I would have done anything to you to get what I wanted. I didn't care. I didn't have a conscience. I thought because of the things that had been done to me, you owed me. The rest of the world owed me for anything. And who cared? Because I'd been hurt, I was going to hurt you. When I sat down with this woman to do my fifth step, I thought, there was nothing she could possibly have in common with me. She looked so fine and well put together and upper class. What could she possibly have with a little street urchin like me? And anything that I shared with her, she said, "Oh yeah, been there, done that." And the things that she said, I believed her because of how she shared them. And by the time I left there, it was like a 1,000-pound weight had been lifted off of me. And I felt like I was a member of this program. I felt like I had a comrade walking with me. And I felt like I could go forward. And it says in the book, we're building an arch through which we shall walk a new person. And that was the first day I had a hint of that. I didn't know that line at that point, but that has become one of my favorite lines. You know, the third step is the keystone in that arch, and the other steps form the rest of that arch. It took me years to actually get that feeling, but I did as I worked through the steps. You know, the first time I did the sixth and seventh the way it was in the big book, since I've studied it in the step book, and the sixth and seventh step have become my favorite steps because it's where the depth of my spiritual program has come to be. As I shed and understood where my character defects came from, that they're my defenses, they're how I survived, and I have to learn to put something else more spiritual in their place. I had to understand that my instincts are God-given, that there's nothing wrong, there's nothing to be ashamed of, but I have to get them realigned after I give up the alcohol. I had a hard time. I got 4 minutes with amends because of all the violence. I thought I would never, ever, ever make amends to my father for the violence of his alcoholic life. However, I didn't know that until I forgave him, I would not be free myself. It took me years and years to understand that, more than 10 years. And what I didn't know is I was blocking myself from the sunlight of the spirit, and that I couldn't remember any of the good of my childhood because I was so filled with hatred. This was the biggest, incredible thing that I couldn't remember anything kind or loving that he had ever done for me because I was fighting and holding on to that hatred so hard. And it really took, I mean, honestly, I met a person in the program when I moved here to West Virginia, which was, it's been 30 years, but this was probably about 20 years ago. And that man was triggering all the terrible feelings I had about my dad. I thought I'd resolved it. But as I worked that through, and I made a kind of a living amends to my dad by working through the feelings that were getting triggered with this person, all of a sudden, these beautiful memories started to come back. And I remembered who taught me my love of gardening? My dad. Who taught me my love of being in the woods and nature? My dad. You know, and all these beautiful feelings came back to me that, you know, way before the violence, way before the progression of my dad's disease, there was my childhood with my father. And I would have never gotten that if I didn't continue to work these steps around and around. You know, it's a progressive recovery, just like it's a progressive disease. You know, and if we continue to stay here, thank you, and come to meetings, and continue to sponsor other people as we sponsor other people, our own recovery grows in depth and width beyond what we could have ever imagined. And it says something in the sixth step. It says, why aim for God's aim for us? That's perfection. How could we ever do that? You know, and but it that's what it is that what God imagines for us, we could never imagine ourselves. And as we become open in the 10th, 11th, and 12th steps to our own spiritual recovery, and as we pass it on to other people, we can't even imagine the life that would grow for us. Today, I have a peace and serenity that's beyond what I would ever, ever have dreamed for myself. I live a life of service. I sponsor quite a few girls, and they give back to me 100 times what I could ever, ever have given to them. It's, I can't even tell you. You know, I'm grateful that I was invited to come here. I'm grateful to be of service to you all, and thank you for what you give to me.